Good morning. Well, this happened yesterday.
Ordinarily, I'd get stuck into the papers and see what's happening in the world, but I have a guest I want to introduce you to straight away without further ado. Bono, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to talk to you.
I'm sorry, pardon, Bono? Bono? This wasn't in forward plans. Turn on the radio. Up he pops. Bono Vox himself. You wouldn't be the better of it. On you go.
Always nice to talk to you. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm just curious to know what you think, looking around at the... Let's go with the nation first. Looking at Ireland first on the 8th of May 2020. Beautiful Friday morning ordinarily. What are you looking at? What are you thinking?
I'm thinking how this whole pandemic, which was supposed to be, you know, the great leveller, is really the opposite. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my circumstances are just incredible. I'm out looking over the sea, spoiled, rotten, magnificent view out the window. And I'm thinking of a lot of people who just are stuck at home, can't get out. Thinking about the Leaving Cert, our boy John. You know, to have some certainty is a really great thing, because there's not much certain about the world right now. And I think that's where what's going to be announced this morning. I heard him screaming out the window last night, so I think he thinks it's done. But people will have mixed feelings. But yeah, you know, it's like we're not all in the same boat, but we are going through the same storm, I suppose. Mm. You went through it, and we all want to serve in our different capacities, you know.
And Ryan asked Bono about his philanthropy, and in particular the donation of €10 million for the acquiring of PPE. And Bono talked about how it all came about. However, bailing out the health system is one thing, but what about the grimy carpet?
Well, first of all, I should say I'm not doing enough hoovering at home. I am quite good at the hoovering, I thought, and beds are not being made well enough, has been explained to me. But on sort of national service,
yes.
You know, early on, I was trying to think how I could be useful. And, you know, with One and Red, we've been involved in fighting the pandemic, that is HIV, for 20 years. And so we know a lot of people. And I got a call from Pascal. Donny, the finance minister, you know, to just talking about how I could contribute, and I thought, well, probably the best thing is figuring out how this PPE procurement would work out. And the band are a little funny about public philanthropy, because in the end, it's part self-promotion. So we've always been wary of it. We're not very American in that sense. It took us a while. But we wanted to do something serious and show solidarity with the frontline medics, but not just, you know, the carers, but, you know, everybody who's out there.
So he got out the Rolodex and, with the help of a man called Liam Casey, made a few calls.
It's like the Raiders of the Lost PPE. It's a really extraordinary market out there. And people are getting, you know, just pushed out of the way, and countries are being pushed out of the way by all manner of vendor. And I just thought, well, this is what we can do. We have relationships with some people in China, and was encouraged by Paddy Cosgrave to call the guys in Alibaba. We call Tencent. We call people in China. I know everyone was calling everybody, and Kenny was involved. Everyone was just trying to make sure that we would prioritize, that we wouldn't be stuck without those masks, without those gowns. And, you know, we were. It's really difficult. And so I managed to, with the help of Liam Casey and the help of the band, to get, when it's finished, it'll be about, I think it's about 20 million masks. They're called the 2-OR masks. That were the HSE are looking for. And Paul Reed was incredible on this. And I think we'll have 300,000 masks, 100,000 visors, 100,000 goggles, and I think we've 30, 5,000 gowns. So, you know, it's a small contribution in truth, but, you know, I think we could just about afford it, so we did it.
Well, there you have it. And Bono is turning 60 on Sunday, but no Harleys or glitter balls for this birthday. The celebration will be fairly low-key.
It's not really the moment for a big celebration. I'm just grateful that I got here, and I'm really grateful to the people who got me to where I am, and the band, and my family, and my mates, and the country who gave us, you know, you two, an incredible life, and, you know, and allowed us to be able to afford to be useful in this moment, which is, I want to thank the country for putting up with, you know, my sometimes avuncular self. But I'm feeling pretty meditative now and reflective and just giving thanks, really.
Did something happen in your life in the last, say, 3 to 5 years that made you do a personal or physical audit?
Yeah.
And what was that?
But I'm sort of, you know, that's a few things. And I'd rather not get into it. I mean,
okay.
People have enough to be thinking about. And
yeah. No, I just ask curiously because I just get the sense reading about you, and I mean, I don't know you particularly well, but reading an interview here or there, or whatever, I got the sense something. And again, I'm not prying as to what happened, but I get the sense that you've been very reflective about the world. More so, I know you do that anyway, but just particularly in the last number of years.
Yeah, well, you know, you do come across, you know, your own mortality. It happens to people at a very early age or later, you know, the loss of a relative or can happen to you personally. There's just a moment where you realize you can't, you know, just drive yourself into a wall and expect the wall to crumble.
Yeah, there might be a little bit of give in the wall. You are Bono, after all. Now, he's great and all that, but we kind of know Bono. He's one of our own. Everybody's got a Bono story. So all hail Alan, who texted in the question we really wanted to ask.
Is Matt Damon sleeping on your couch? And if so, is he helping with the housework?
Matt Damon. Well, look, most of us have been trying to dodge Matt Damon since
Contagion.
Since Contagion. He's, you know, Johnny Nomates, isn't he? And actually, this, you know, it's the strangest thing. Yeah. I mean, I've known him for a long time. He travelled to Africa with One. He co-founded Water.org. You know, he followed through on all that stuff. He's an incredible human being. His family are, yes, they are close by. But I'll tell you one thing that really annoys me about him is all the locals here have voted him sort of sexiest man in Dorky, which I find offensive. when I go in there and I go, what is that all about? They said, oh, yeah, he's been posing with a super value plastic bag. Yeah. And I'm like, what's that all about? He carries stuff in a Bono. He carries, he walks around, he swims. he used to do the shopping before he got locked up. So, it's great that, and it's great, I think, confidence. He's showing confidence in the country.
Yeah.
He could have left.
Sure.
He said no. He sees the madness that's going on in his own land. And he loves it here.
Yeah.
And, he's a proper person.
That was Bono with Ryan yesterday. Happy birthday. Now, a total change of pace. Described as a sonic portrait of Skellig Michael and the company of world-renowned sound recordist Chris Watson, Skellig's calling was this week's Doc on One.
There's one bird, one species of auk, which I think many people come to Skellig Michael just to see and sometimes hear, and it's the one bird that most people can identify, the puffin, the Atlantic puffin. And they're here in season on Skellig Michael in their thousands, probably tens of thousands. A small black and white sort of dumpy looking bird with a beautifully colourful bill. And they don't use the rocky ledges or holes to nest in. They prefer the steep-sided grassy slopes which surround Skellig Michael, and they make holes in these grassy knolls and nest deep inside, a metre or so inside, in burrows. But because they've nested there for so long and in such large numbers, they've created this incredible honeycomb pattern of holes and burrows around the middle part of the island. And a microphone down inside one of these burrows picks up all this honeycomb effect of birds calling and answering to each other from below the surface and within their burrows, with this lovely, deep, rolling motorbike droning sound, which again they call and listen for a reply from their neighbour.
Skellig's Calling the Dock on One, a very beautiful piece of radio, which brings us kind of nicely to here.
Luke, you do not yet realize your importance. You have only begun to discover your power. Join me, and I will complete your training. With our combined strength, we can end this destructive conflict and bring order to the galaxy.
I'll never join you!
If you only knew the power of the dark side, Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father.
He told me enough. He told me you killed him.
No. I am your father.
Star Wars, which was the focus for an arena special on Monday, which, wait for it, had Skellig Michael featuring as part of the Star Wars set. 5 points. But that original plot twist, which seemed groundbreaking at the time, now seems a bit of a ham sandwich. Here's Sean Rocks and Chris Wasser going half fanboy, half quizzical raised eyebrow.
Jeepers, back in 1980.
You really enjoyed that, Sean.
Back in 1980, I thought this was gritty realism.
But it's actually hilarious, because if The Empire Strikes Back was released today, by tomorrow afternoon, everyone will be tweeting about how Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father. But I remember watching an interview with Mark Hamill where he said that himself and the actor who portrayed Darth Vader in The Empire Strikes Back were the only people, along with the crew shooting that knew about that. Right. And it wasn't until the premiere that Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford were sitting there and went, "What? I did not know this." Yeah. So they somehow managed to keep that a secret, which is astonishing.
But it also touches on, I suppose, the style of it. Because, you know, you listen to that, it's almost Shakespearean. A little bit over the top, it has to be admitted. It's Greek, you know. It turns out that the really good Luke Skywalker, the good guy fighting for good, the evil villain is his father. That's Greek. That's epic in scale.
However, when it came to the Star Wars prequels, well, no one was holding back. Least of all, Sean.
Do you try to forget the first time you saw The Phantom Menace, Cara?
God, yes, absolutely.
Which was the first of the three in the prequels.
First of the three.
What? Look, if I ask any of you what your least favourite film, it's probably going to be one of the three prequels, I think.
Where to even begin? I mean,
what was it? 1999, finally George Lucas, 16 years after the huge success of the three, the initial trilogy, gets to go back and do the origin stories. The Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, even that name says something though, doesn't it? And Revenge of the Sith, again, the name tells you something. What went so terribly wrong?
The man just lost the run of himself. I mean, it's a combination of, appalling dialogue, complete over-the-top acting. There's this wild leaps of inconsistency that just don't really fit with the first films.
Yeah.
But even, horrendous characters like Jar Jar Binks, who's just unforgivable. CGI that just wasn't even worthy of its time. It just was that backwards. Star Wars is amazing because it's about action and it keeps moving and there's momentum and and the characters. But this... conversations about trade negotiations that went on for 20 minutes. Yeah. I mean, say, like, when was that ever going to be interesting for anybody other than maybe an economist?
We've got 3 years of entertainment on it, and with British politics over the last week.
That's very true. Maybe this is where it all came from.
Cara O'Doherty on the Star Wars Arena special on Monday. But could Sean Rocks have been referring to this?
How are the Brexit preparations coming along?
Our beloved firstborn Brexit. We don't even need to hear the answer, just to know it's out there. And of course, more from Sean O'Rourke later. Back in a bit. Welcome back. What to do about the leaving certificate is a topic that bounced around the airwaves this week. And on Friday, the Leo promise of exams by hook or by crook had turned into cancelled, to be replaced by Plan B, calculated grades, a ranking of students by teachers combined with the national standardisation process. Earlier in the week, Joe,
wash your hands,
Duffy, spoke to students about what they wanted. Here's Eve, who had been in favour of cancelling the exam, and she spoke about the stress all of this was causing.
Everyone says it's the most stressful exam of your life. Yeah. And having to sit that in the middle of a worldwide pandemic is just, I think it's creating insurmountable pressure for Leaving Cert students. And I know personally, and a lot of my friends are struggling with their mental health and the stress that is being put on us. And I don't think that point is being made enough. And I think making us sit the exam is going to cause severe damage to students.
And when you say, Eve, you know a lot of people who are suffering mental stress over this. How are they showing that? Are they upset? Are they not sleeping? Are they not eating? Are they...
Yeah, well, they're definitely, like, for myself personally, I would always have been a very good student, but I've just been finding myself almost disengaging because it's so difficult to have the self-discipline and sit down and just do your own study without being in a classroom environment. Mm-hmm. And, like, personally, like, we live in Tipperary and our broadband isn't the best, and we have four of us sharing the one laptop, so that's really not ideal for online learning.
Eve from Wednesday's Liveline, the Leaving Cert 4am sweats at the very best of times, but now at least, hopefully, some clarity. Now, we all know that sports fans have been hit hard by this pandemic, but spare a thought for the pigeons.
Those involved in pigeon racing are awaiting clarification from policymakers as to when their racing season can begin. There are around 12,000 members of pigeon clubs on the island of Ireland. Their season was scheduled to begin in early April. Leading pigeon fancier John Thompson spoke to Eamon Horan at his base at the North Wall in Dublin about the challenge of keeping his pigeons motivated with no racing.
As soon as we get the go-ahead, which I hope it's soon, every pigeonman in the country, north, south, east and west, is waiting. Just to get the go-ahead, we start training and get a bit of racing. As I said, a pigeon racing is an isolated sport. Look, they're like children, you have to look after them all the time, 24-7. And the winter times is as hard as the summer times. But we're six races behind now at the moment. I think we 12 all-board races, about six. We've lost six. So hopefully the Minister of Sport sees a bit of... I know he has plenty of sense, but he get the pigeon racing going back again, you know, this way, for the people. They will get lazy and they would get... they don't want to fly, you know what I mean, that they've been locked up for so long. But if you let them out for a few minutes every day, just to keep them... thing, and then motivate them, take that missus away from them, take the hen away from them, and let the cock go... Where's she gone, like, you know what I mean? It's like your own missus. If she went uptown for a couple of weeks, you'd miss her.
That's John Thompson updating us on pigeon racing. All tickets purchased for this year's...
Oh my God, that is classic. How Drive Time's Pádraig Lodge kept a straight delivery on that, I will not know. Now, after last week's shenanigans, thankfully, pigeons aside, there was a distinct lack of sexy time on the radio this week. But not everyone was satisfied.
I want to complain about last night's episode of Normal People. There was no nudity, no fornication. I was not scandalised in the least. This is an outrage. How do I complain to Joe?
Pah, no nudity, no fornication. But like the gift that keeps on giving, Normal People yielded a piece of jewellery.
Is it a chain or a necklace?
It's a chain.
It's a chain.
And yeah, I didn't think I'd be talking about the chain.
But here you are.
But here I am. Who knew that chain?
Strange days indeed. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Lorna Muggan, costume designer on the filth-laden TV series Normal People, because only in COVID-19 might a piece of jewellery so capture the zeitgeist. And the chain in question is worn by actor Paul Mescal as Connell, and it now has its own Instagram account, with at last check well over 30,000 followers. And Ray Darcy is anxious to uncover the deeper, unconscious meaning of said chain.
What's your take on it? I was saying yesterday that, you know, it sort of... It reflects his enigmatic, maybe complex personality. Mm.
I think the world has kind of fallen in love with Connell and Marianne, and you know, this is, you know, a little piece of him that people identify with Connell. They empathise with him. They want to wear that badge of honour with him. You know, it's something that's you couldn't have predicted.
And where, pray tell, can you get this piece of jewellery, this chain, described in the novel as Argos chic?
So did you purchase it in Argos?
I can't say.
Why can't you say?
I can't say because we only have one chain in the world at the moment, and it's now with Daisy. So I feel that Paul needs his own chain.
Okay.
So we're waiting until shops open. We get back out there and get.
And did Paul gift it? Did Paul?
Paul gifted it to Daisy at the end. Yeah, right. And then we had to get it back from her for photos, and then it got lost. And then I found it in a shoe, and I posted it to Daisy. So. That's where it is.
That's where it is. And because you, as part of your job, have to find another one, you're not willing to tell us where we can buy it in case they're all gone.
In case they're all gone. And that would be devastating for Paul, I think. Yeah.
So that suggests to me that it's some sort of multinational as opposed to a person you could ring up and say, hold one for me.
Not sure.
Right. Yeah.
Costume designer Lorna Muggan with Ray and Men of Ireland. Get the chain. Writer Emma Donoghue was Miriam O'Callaghan's guest on Sunday. She spoke about writing a novel set during the Spanish flu of 1918. And almost as an aside, she asked to read a poem.
Nowadays we're talking a lot about how vulnerable the old are, you know, as if they're some amorphous mass. So I love when I come across something that manages to individualise somebody in old age and take their griefs and their fear seriously. It's a poem by an American writer called Michael Mark called Celebrating His 92nd Birthday, the Year His Wife Died. He goes to Ben's Deli because the waitress doesn't ask how he is. He takes most of the corned beef from the sandwich, piles it on the edge of the plate, makes a thinner one with enough left for two nice ones at home. The waitress packs his leftovers, extra slices of rye and half-sour pickles in waxed paper and two mustards in squat cups. She never removes the other setting. She lets him sit as long as he wants.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Sorry, you think I could get through a short poem on air without crying, but there must be so many people out there trying to get on with their lives and when they've just lost somebody. And when you see some people talking about how, oh, the old don't matter so much because they're closer to death anyway, you know, it just sickens me at the moment the way, you know, young people go on social media saying, oh, let's be sensible about the death of the old. They would have died anyway, you know.
Yeah, no, you're so right, Emma, and sensitive, because it's such a beautiful last line.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Kind of says it all.
It doesn't say a thing about his feelings. You just deduce it all from the fact that he doesn't want the other play setting taken away.
Emma Donoghue with Miriam on Sunday. On Monday, the RTE Concert Orchestra joined musicians to celebrate the phenomenon that was A Woman's Heart and the Irish Mammy anthem, Sonny.
Many years have rolled on. Sonny's old and alone. His daddy's a sailor and he never came home. Sometimes he wonders what his life might have been. Ah, but still from the grave Mama's voice haunts his dreams. Sonny, don't go away, I'm here all alone. Your daddy's a sailor, never comes home. Nights are so long, the silence goes on, and I feel I'm so tired. Not all that's wrong. So don't go.
Song is, I'm reminded of one of those, you know, how many, you know, what, light bulb jokes. How many Irish mothers does it take to change a light bulb?
I'm fine here in the dark.
Mary Coughlin on A Woman's Heart, as heard on Bank Holiday Monday. Back in a bit. Welcome back. Yesterday marked the end, for now, of a 25-year career in broadcasting for Sean O'Rourke. A career that included Morning Ireland, This Week, The News at One, and The Week in Politics, and of course, Today with Sean O'Rourke. Paying tribute to such a formidable radio presence? No mean feat.
Good morning and hello again. Sean O'Rourke here. It's good to be back as intended on the 2nd of September, but not quite as expected. 3 hours earlier than usual and for 2 hours every weekday. What a prospect.
You're afraid of Sean O'Rourke. You're sitting outside. It's like sitting outside the principal's office when you're sitting on the corridor waiting to come on. You can mess anywhere else, but you can't mess with Sean O'Rourke.
I wish that was true. Really, you led with your chin. You got a right belt. But you did believe that once, did you?
I did say that at the time, yes, I did.
Did you believe it when you said it?
I did at the time.
Surely the thing to do was not so much threaten to leave, but threaten to stay. I'm going to ask the guys to shut your mic down or pull down the channel if you don't stop. Donald Trump, good morning.
Good morning. Now, I was leading the polls, as you know, last time. I was beating everybody.
Might you consider letting your name go forward?
Stranger things have happened. We'll see what happens.
Do all these jokes people make about your hair, do they bother you?
Oh, they kill me. It is my hair, as you've probably noticed. I don't wear a hairpiece.
I have the quote here, actually. And I don't want to get in trouble a second time over Donald Trump's hair. But anyway, here we go. A contained island after scalp reduction surgery, surrounded by a furry circle. A furry circle of hair. Sorry, I can't go on.
It's hard to keep a straight face.
Taoiseach Kendakenny, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
It's all in line with a quote from a government strategist. We will scare the shit out of them in the last 10 days. So, Taoiseach, what's your scare story this morning? Good morning to you, Eamon Gilmore.
Good morning, Sean. I would have liked to finish the game, but I was carrying a lot of injuries from the first half. I decided to bow to the inevitable.
Gerry Adams, Uachtaráin Sinn Féin, good morning.
Imagine more, Sean.
You seem to be suggesting that every euro you earn above 100,000 will only be taxed at 7 cent in the euro. That is not the case.
That is the case, Sean. That is the case that has been carefully worked out with us.
Leo Varadkar, Taoiseach, good morning. It's probably a bit premature to ask you this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Where did it all go wrong in this campaign for you? Micheál Martin, good morning to you.
Good morning, Sean.
If you don't succeed this time, why should you get a fourth chance?
Well, Sean, it's not about Micheál Martin.
Mary Lou MacDonald, Sinn Féin president. You're coy about saying you are a realistic prospect for the office of Taoiseach.
We wish to be in government, lead a government that delivers real change. What's coy about that?
Magella Moynihan, good morning to you. You're welcome to the studio.
They thought they'd break me. They didn't. I'm a very strong woman.
Niamh Cosgrave is in studio now. Good morning to you, Niamh.
My exact words were, the gendarmes lied. I said, when you left my home, you walked away with my dignity and my humanity. And that's when he looked away.
Brian Toomey, good morning and you're welcome.
Apparently I had a 3% chance of survival. I was dead for 6 seconds. That willpower and that determination, I think, really helps.
I've been sitting in this chair for almost 7 years and there have been very few moments that quite take your breath away quite like that. Alive and kicking, one footy in the grave, Fernando Lafuente Saiz, good morning to you.
Good morning. I mean, I'm finding it a little bit funny because basically, I'm not dead.
That's the way he goes. That's his modus operandi. You heard it here first.
Sean, I was injured. Sean.
What exactly happened? Were you holding two bottles?
He's a curious man, isn't he? I met him last
There might be a
year,
pair of you in it. Go on. You don't intend to make an announcement until next September.
Until after the summer next year, yes.
Okay, President.
Does that keep you happy, Sean?
I'm always happy. At the ploughing. Nothing ever lasts forever. Brian O'Connell and Paddy O'Gorman.
Morning, Sean.
We're going on tour, Sean, the two of us, on Monday. We're setting off around the country in a camper van.
We got the offer of a bed in Bearhaven Lodge.
Very nice lady.
Myself and Snoop, we're maintaining a healthy distance between us. But he's a pretty sedate little fella and he's good-mannered and the dog isn't bad either.
Paddy O'Gorman is here. I think, yes. Paddy, you're kind of regretting not having your guitar. You could have joined in. I was watching you there. You were in a kind of a reverie.
Well, it was very beautiful.
Valerie Cox spent 11 years reporting for this programme.
But you know, Sean, some Dublin people now are taking it up as a hobby. And they spend their weekends. Now, it wouldn't
you
be with the horses.
Joking.
No, I'm not.
Well, Evelyn O'Rourke has spent a morning digging around our wheelie bins to see if we're learning more.
The glamour gigs just keep coming my way, don't they, Sean?
Time's running out the door, you're running in.
ground wasn't level. It would be like me taking you on in a political debate. I just don't think it would be a fair contest, and I admire he's...
Okay, I give Sean a little chance.
Okay, maybe just a small chance.
It's been my great privilege to sit in the best current affairs chair in Irish broadcasting. But nothing is forever. I've had an absolute blast.
Can I just finally say, I wouldn't have done this interview with anybody else, okay?
Well, that's flattering. Olivia, thank you so much.
Well, bear bannock, don't talk.
Bear bannock, don't bear boa.
Just some of the very best bits of the last 7 years of Today with Sean O'Rourke, compiled there by Alistair McConnell. And while Sean had spent most of the last few weeks batting away compliments and praise, it simply couldn't be avoided yesterday. Even politicians who Sean had made squirm over the years had come out to pay homage, maybe grudgingly at times, because God knows, if you weren't up before your breakfast to meet Sean O'Rourke, well, political careers have fallen on less.
There's two things I'd say about Sean. One, you'd always make sure that you're very prepared for the interview. As a politician, you never go into an interview unprepared, but you'd always know that Sean would know his stuff. And some of my party colleagues have discovered, a Sean O'Rourke interview can go very badly if you're not prepared for it. The second thing is a very mischievous sense of humour.
One was always on the alert going in to be interviewed by Sean O'Rourke. You had a sense that a trapdoor could open at any moment because he was very informed, incredible attention to detail, authoritative and very well read. I think he was an outstanding public service broadcaster. I think he had an iconic voice. He had a consistency in terms of quality and standards that would be very hard to surpass.
I think when Sean is going to interview, he'll interview you. Like, he's not one to stand off an issue or not to challenge and challenge hard. Certainly we had interviews that we went at hammer and tongs. It was like a battle of wits. He's a very, very formidable interviewer. And you can always be sure if Sean is interviewing you, you're not going to get an easy ride.
I always thought he was a great broadcaster. Very well informed and very thorough, very searching. But what I remember most and liked best was when the ad breaks came or when the 11 o'clock news came on, we always engaged in some banter. And he was very witty, very funny. And he's going to be a big loss. I'm sorry he's going. And I hope he'll reappear again as a broadcaster in some other capacity.
I think that Sean O'Rourke brought a benign scepticism to his job. He and I did go toe-to-toe on many, many occasions. You'll know that people from the North have a love-hate relationship with RTE for all sorts of fairly obvious reasons. But I always thought that Sean brought a bit of good humour. A person who was listening to what he was being told with a twinkle in his eye. I have to say I enjoy listening to Sean and to the programme these days more than I did being on.
I remember in 1980 when Charles Haughey came down to Castlebar to have a plaque unveiled at the house where he was reputed to be born. And I think that was Sean O'Rourke's first engagement as a political correspondent for the press. And I met him in Marsh House in Castlebar. And I said to him going up the stairs, Sean, you know you'd need eyes in the back of your head for a job like this. And he said, that's for effing well sure.
Sean O'Rourke, as an interviewer, was tough. You're never going to get easy questions or an easy ride. But the big thing, I think, in public service broadcasting is that we're allowed debate. And somebody like Sean, who's anchored two of the biggest programs in public service broadcasting in the States for, you know, 25 years, that job and that role has huge responsibility for him as well as the people he's asking questions to. And I think he's done that in a commendable way.
He can find the hard edge when he needs to. He can find humour when he needs to. When he needs to soften a situation, he can do that. I think he has an ability to ride the waves with a great degree of competence and a great degree of confidence. And that, of course, is a mixture of skill and experience, but also a human empathy and nous that he has. And that's what I admire in him. He's not going to go away. I mean, I know he's going to find a lot of other things to do. And at 65, we have not heard the last of Sean O'Rourke.
Ooh, let's hope so. Politicians and leaders of all hues paying tribute to this master interviewer. But when Sean himself was asked his highlights, yes, the high flyers were there, but it was what he described as the gnawlini that stood out.
There are lots of things, but I think, you know, most of all, they're the people who They weren't the politicians. I'm really grateful to everybody who's come to be interviewed on the programme. But the people, you know, as recently as last week, we had people on who were in very difficult positions. With like Celine Byrne, you know, talking about her lockdown anthem, and her dad was at that store and he died a couple of days ago, and she spoke so beautifully about it. People you know, who were up against it, looking after kids, people in very difficult situations, ordinary people like that. Dr. Gertrude Ronan, who was a doctor, GP, she knew she was coming towards the end, but she wanted to talk about her cancer diagnosis and about the work of the hospice. I mean, so many Gnadhini as well. And also
a reminder of the many layers and tones that Sean brought to bear in his interviews. But what was it like to be sitting across the desk from him in the studio? Well, Mary-Louise O'Donnell joined Sean yesterday, and for her, it was his ability to really listen, which was key.
I always had a great listener. You can come in with a story, but you have to have a listener. And you loved the listening, and you loved being part of like what you'd call adult awe about the story. You'd sit and listen to the story and knew when to interject, to push it on or to get out the best in me, you know. So you can have the greatest story in the world and you can come in with projects and people and organisations, but if you haven't the listener presenter, you know, and you are a brilliant listener presenter.
Would you go out and listen?
It's like being in your sitting room at home when you come in and you'd be telling this great story and you could see the enthusiasm on your face because you knew then you were doing the listening for the nation, you know. And especially because it's very difficult to jump from, as I say, the political and the social elite to the ploughing and the fellas talking about bull semen, you know. Do you remember that?
And another guest in studio was this regular.
Dermot Ferreter, what are you doing here?
I can assure you I'm not here to officially announce that you are history, Sean.
That's okay. That's very important.
Far from it. I remember you.
Will there be less of that? Thank you. Now, we did hear from politicians earlier, all on the record and very full of love, kind of. But off the record, it was a slightly different story.
What's up, guys? Today is a day like none other. A farewell to Sean O'Rourke. Smile. Oh, sorry, I wasn't supposed to read that bit out. Not all superheroes wear capes. Some of them wear the ear off you for 30 years on the radio. SOR started in RT back in 1989, so I don't remember because I'm far too young and handsome. Thanks a lot. But enough about me. What does Sean O'Rourke think about me? Of course, we'll never know because he was a neutral bullet of a broadcaster, whereas I'm more of a Nutri-Bullet sort of feat, lol. If I might perhaps quote Terminator 2, because I love robots. Hasta la vista, baby. Now, if you'd excuse me, I don't take any questions from the press anymore. So I'll leave you with the priest from Cork. You know, the guy?
Hold on a second. I'm going to pardon my speaking here. I just want to say to you, good luck, Sean. I always felt that you were a Fianna Fáil style of presenter, if you don't mind me saying. You know, the sort of fella who knew his way around the carvery and for whom a brunch was definitely an ice cream and nothing to do with avocado.
People got sued for less. Yes, go on.
But you were mostly Fianna Fáil-esque because you held on for decades until you got the top job. So fair play to you. And now that you did, hopefully they might name a tunnel after you in Leisure or Galway or something like that going forward.
Well, first of all, Sean, I want to say on behalf of Sinn Féin that I'm delighted you're embracing peace and laying down your weapons at last. You were tough, often grumpy, let's be fair, intolerant of guff, and with a past nobody could quite get to grips with or find out. So you would have made a great shinner, to be fair. Sean, on behalf of everyone here at RTE, it's been a great honour listening to you filling in on Today with Miriam for all these years. Your culture edge was so adorable and genuinely made the right call in stepping aside. Who knows who could replace you on the programme? You're such a good listener, and let's face it, that's just what you'll be now. Another one of my listeners. I'm the busiest woman in the world. And now let's go over finally to the man who's been filling in for me as president for the last few years. It's indeed just a few short words in tribute to SOR from my chachun, Tommy Chachunach. I call this poem Today with Sean O'Rourke, Tomorrow Without Him. You are the man who put Bailey on ice. You love Galway more than a student loves Supermax spice bags. If they could put the GAA on a stick, you'd lick it. You dismembered dragons at ministers and ministered the listeners. Read the local papers from Donegal to Munster, but you were a little suspicious of popular culture. Whether ploughing or frowning, you were often quite droll, and you'll always be the man Donald Trump called an a-hole. Bulabus, gorgeous, gorgeous, Goramila Mayakif Kolea.
Oliver Callan bringing the badness. However, while Sean himself quite rightly acknowledged the enormous work done by producer Tara Campbell and the entire SOR production team, for the listener, though, it was all about Sean. Because it was his voice who had punctuated their lives. His was the presence in their kitchens and their milking parlours. Niamh Lyons read some texts into the programme.
Every morning for the past few years, you've been with me in the milking parlour. Your programme comes on just as I'm washing up after feeding the calves. I often wonder, do radio presenters really realise how connected they are to their listeners? That's from Nuala Murray from Culla Ballinasloe, County Galway. Another person from Tralee, County Kerry, said, "Dear Sean, I will miss your dulcet tone so much. It was like having a good friend drop in every day while I have breakfast." And then another one from Barbara Kelly in Black Rock. "You always manage to hold the politicians to account and also show real empathy towards those people who came on the show while experiencing difficult times. Thank you for all you've done for this country, listeners and myself. Many a lonely day with young small children and no family near me and my husband gone till 6 p.m. Your voice brought friendship, humour, information and a voice into my kitchen." That's just from MM. I thought it was a really nice one because I was the same when I was on maternity leave myself. The radio is your best friend. "Just a short note to say how much I enjoyed your programme over the last 7 years. Those seven coincided with two maternity leaves and career breaks from teaching. Your knowledge, empathy and sense of humour will be greatly missed by me and no doubt by plenty of others. And one in particular, Sean, which I thought was lovely. They live in Southampton and she listens in. Her name is Sheila Fegherty and she says her husband always says, 'Well, what's the world according to Sean O'Rourke looking like today?'"
And Sean himself read this particular text.
"Good luck, Sean. Smell the roses. I'll miss your honest to goodness plain talk and most of all your sexy West of Ireland accent." Berbua. Another one. I didn't read that before. Before this, so it just kind of came at me, as it were.
Oh, and you don't want that on your last day. But earlier, Sean had spoken to old friends and newsroom colleagues, Rachel English and Gavin Jennings on Morning Ireland. So for now, the last word to Sean O'Rourke.
Look, it's kind of, as I said to Christy Dignam the other morning, I said, I'm only kind of retiring, you know. I mean, I think there's a bit left in the tank yet. And it's been great working with you guys and all the people in the newsroom. I mean, I can say it now. I was kind of homesick for the newsroom for about 6 months when I came over here because I had built up such friendships and, you know, admiration. And look, I am immensely proud of the job that this organisation is doing right across the board. We've had some important work to do and none more so than now. Listen, thank you, guys. Been a pleasure.